The lights are on red. We're away.
Hello and welcome to MotoGPOD, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. Today is Friday, February 12th. This is episode number 214. And I have a very special guest host this week. Super fan and number one contributor to MotoGPOD, Martin Darlington, who has a very special job. Welcome, Martin.
Hi, Jim. How you doing? Great to be on here. I think a few people have heard my voice before with the roundup of Valencia email. But yeah, I'm a helicopter pilot for the Wales Air Ambulance. We run three helicopters, all funded by charity, manned by commercial pilots and NHS paramedics. I'm not working today, but I'll be working again tomorrow. And in between shouts, listening to how bad a job I'd managed to do of this. So I'm going to hand back to you now, Jim, and say, okay, let's go with the show.
Hey, and between emails that we exchanged earlier this week, and I know that the weather has been incredibly dodgy over there. In fact, you sent me a picture that I thought was incredibly cool, but you've kind of been trying to figure out landing zones lately. Give me a very short rundown on that.
Yeah, well, basically what we've been doing is we have, depending on the weather, we have various problems. The base we use at Welshpool tends to flood because the River Severn runs right next to us, and due to the wonderful flood defences downstream, it backs up and we flood. They're in England, we're in Wales, so we're thinking of getting some Welshmen together with some shovels and digging holes in it next time the river gets up. We've had a lot of snow. I'm very conscious that we haven't had, was it 2 feet in 24 hours that Washington DC had? So, but we have a bit of a habit in this country of thinking, well, it's just going to be warm and wet, and then when the snow arrives, 2 inches, whole country grinds to a halt. But it does create some problems with access for ambulances, with the road ambulances. So we've been getting used quite a lot, and we try and have RV points, rendezvous points around the country. So we've been dashing around and basically just looking at various places that we'll be able to meet up with ambulances, and that's pretty much it. And other than that, we're just doing the usual stuff, to hospitals and around.
Excellent. I mean, it certainly is a valorous service, and we thank you for doing that, Stefan. I will remind, because there's plenty of racers that actually listen to this, and those of you that are in that area, if MotoGPOD or Martin puts out a call for any of the charity work that he does, jump to it. It's a great service, and it's very important, especially as a racer, it's very important. But anyway, let's get into the show. Listener emails. We got a fair amount this week, but there was one that I thought was really cool. And I really try not to put out forward-looking stuff that may or may not happen. But this is the exact kind of thing that I really think is cool. And so I thought I'd want to mention it. And it's from listener Leon McDonald. And he says, I will be attending the Phillip Island Round World Superbike in February as a track marshal. And all hail the track marshals. I've done it myself. In Australia, like Laguna, we get pit access, get to mingle with the riders. We get to talk with the riders. Some are a lot more talkative than others, of course. And I thought I could record and offer these to you afterwards. If you feel they're of value, please publish. Thank you, Leon. Totally appreciate that kind of stuff. The key is, for our listeners out there that want to provide content to MotoGPOD, is to think about the sound when you actually do a recording. The key is to find yourself somewhere quiet and try and make sure that there's not a whole lot of background noise. And that's the kind of stuff that we can use. I'm guilty of it myself. I listen to some of the interviews that I've done like 5 years ago, where I'm just sitting in the paddock and there's a ton of, background noise. So sometimes the content is way too valuable to even worry about that. You just run it. But sometimes it's actually hard to hear the participants. So anyway, you know what, Martin, we got Sepang to talk about. We had a test last week.
We certainly did. And wasn't that a joy? How many months have we been starved of anything but rumor and new liveries? I think as a result of that, there's possibly a tendency, and I've noticed it with myself, to put too much weight on the results.
Well, yeah, your point is well taken. I mean, testing, you get no points at testing, right?
Exactly.
Usually when you're talking testing, and especially this year with MotoGP, the engine types that they used in this whole sealed engine things and the 6x18, which I think is a crock of you-know-what, is everybody's coming out and they're just experimenting because right now nobody has to seal a thing. They don't have to seal engines until the beginning of the first, real race weekend, which is, April something?
April 11th, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, as I said, to Eugene, the clock is ticking. But he's only got a week now.
Yeah,
2 weeks.
Fortnight Sunday, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Sepang is kind of an interesting track, and they run two tests there pre-season, which is I always thought was kind of weird as well. But the semi-usual suspects ended up at the top by the end of the weekend. Run down the top 10 for me, because I think those are interesting.
Yeah, we got Rossi out in front, and comfortably out in front, which a lot of people are putting a lot of emphasis on. Stoner, predictably second. Jorge Lorenzo, third. Danny in fourth. And then the first of the newcomers, and predictably, or not predictably, depending which view you take, Ben Spies. Stealing Collins' customary fifth place. Dovi in sixth. Collins seventh. And he's 2/10 of a second, 2.5/10 of a second behind Ben. Nicky Hayden coming in eighth, and he's saying that he's much more comfortable on the bike. Aleix Espargaró, I mean, that's a cracking start for him, coming in ninth, and Loris in tenth. And I think Loris on one of the sessions finished very well, and yet they're still running the old engine. I believe they were running the 2009 engine in new chassis, because the new engine's still in Japan. So that, again, as we saw last year, though, Suzuki sometimes flatter to deceive in pre-season.
Well, but it was interesting, because day one, Loris was right up there. He was near the front, and for whatever reason, the Suzukis have always run well there. And when I looked at the notes, and I looked at the QP times from last year, if you scroll down a bit, you can see it. Nobody was running. Most people were not running as fast as they were last year. Now, granted, totally, Sepang is frankly a very changeable track, and it's almost hard to compare the track from day by day. The second day this year was, for this test, was pretty much marred by rain most of the morning, and so they end up on a green track. But there are two big surprises in there. Espargaró, there were a lot of people that thought that was a flash in the pan from last year. And if there is somebody else that can come to terms relatively quickly, and if you look at his time, he's what? He's only a second.
1.7 off Rossi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty promising.
And the surprising thing is Mika Kallio.
Yeah.
Right down in 17th.
Yeah.
Now, obviously he may have had some issues. They may have been testing kit. They may have used him as the test donkey and had Aleix Espargaró on fairly standard kit. I don't know, but that would, to me, was quite a surprise.
Yeah.
Not a surprise to see Barbera, Ayama, Simoncelli, and Bautista down there.
Yeah, so let me run through 11 through 17 so the listeners can hear. 11th was Melandri. 12th was Barbera. 13th was Depugnier, who didn't fall off all weekend, so that bodes well for another successful and upright. 14th was Hiroshi on the Interwitten bike, which is interesting looking. I don't know if you've seen any of the pictures of it, but there's some different things about that. I think that might be a bit of a an experimental model for Honda.
Test bed.
Yeah, a test bed. 15th was Simoncelli, 16th was Bautista, and 17th was Callio. And as you say, there is a serious tendency, because it's been so long, to take testing, to look at testing and go, okay, that's how the season's going to work. No.
Yeah.
There are so many changes, and none of us, unless we're there and literally in the garages and on the teams, know what kind of bits of kit are going into these bikes at this point and what they're trying to pull together. So it's fun to look at. The big thing that bums me about this year is we're not going to have a race zero at Jerez at the IRTA test. And so it's pretty much straight away to racing.
It's a few weeks, isn't it, back at Sepang?
Mm-hmm.
But on this test, I do think that Ben Spee's position is quite significant, because the accepted wisdom is to ride an 800, you need to ride it like a 250. And yet, all the 250 riders are 12th, the new ones are 12th and below, and he's up there in 5th. I mean, is this guy just the most amazingly adaptable rider? You know, is he something really, really MotoGP level special, or will it prove to be a flash in the pan? I mean, I went to Valencia, I watched him, and it was really hair-raising. He sat, and you could watch him learning. You could see his cornering changing as the race went on, looking over his shoulder a lot. I mentioned it in the race report, and I thought, why is he looking over his shoulder so much? They don't do that. Whoever's behind you is their problem. And then afterwards he said, I didn't want to mess up anyone else's race. I'm just here as a wild card. And I thought, that boy's got mental capacity. And then he just got his head down, and it was inevitable he was going to go past people. Even Dovi, it wasn't when he was going to go past Dovi. And I think he's definitely the one to watch from the rookies.
So I was just peeking down to look at the QP times from last year. And this is his, I believe, I could be wrong. Maybe he has run there before. He could have. His first time at Sepang.
It's got to be, hasn't it? He didn't wild card there.
That's true. But my point being is that his time, even though everybody was slower during this test, would have put him 10th on the grid. And that's after 2 days on a bike he's totally unfamiliar with, on tires he's, you know, not really, he's familiar with it from Valencia, but still very impressive. And, you know, I really don't want to over pump him up, because you never want to be let down, but I agree with you. I think he's going to be, out of the rookies, going to be the one to watch. Whether he will, I don't think he'll do what he did last year, and I don't think that's his intent at all. I think he's being very humble coming into the series, intends to come in and make it a learning experience, and then maybe year two.
Exactly. And I really like him. He came with a bit of a flatliner. You know, he was a bit James Toseland in the sense that he's very good at PR, and he'd always give the measured answer. But I really like him. I think he's come across as quite a... He allows his personality to come out to a degree. Yeah, I think he's just a laid-back guy. But how you can be that laid-back in an interview just after, you cannot do what he does and be relaxed about it, surely.
Yeah, it's got to be difficult. I think part of it is his measured tone is a... And it's always been is like a counterpoint to his arch rival back in the AMA, Matt Mladen, who we'll talk about later because there's an interesting little story on that.
Yeah.
So, you know, another story that came out of there, and I know that you know about this, was Simoncelli's incident. Why don't you tell us about it?
Yeah, I've not seen it, but reading the reports, he had a big moment and a big crash, no permanent injuries from it. And it was interesting to see his words afterwards, though. If his words are to be believed, and I read them as opposed to heard them spoken, so tone wasn't something I could pick up on, he sounds pretty okay about it. From the description, it sounded very similar to James Toseland's at the beginning of last season, and we know what that did to his confidence at the start. I suspect Simoncelli's a different character. And so he really seemed to be just, oh, no, that happens. That's fine. You know, the team are happy with it. We know what. I think that's the big thing. He knows what he did to cause the crash to happen.
Okay.
And I think they get upset when, well, I mean, you've raced, Jim, and, you know, it's when you've crashed and you think, well, hang on, I didn't do anything different to all the laps before. That's when it bothers them. So I don't think it's likely to have a huge effect on him psychologically, because he does come across as a pretty tough geezer. But it was a heck of a moment.
Yeah, you know, you're exactly right. When you don't know what caused a crash, those are the kind of things that really affect your confidence, because you, and anytime you go down, you analyze the hell out of it, because, you know, A, you want to make sure it doesn't happen again, and B, you want to figure out what you need to change to take care of it. And there is one crash to this day that I have no idea why it happened. It hurt, and I still think about it when I think about getting out on track. Very well taken. There were a few other guys that went down, but the nice thing about it is that quite often Sepang takes his toll preseason. Well, at least so far, in this first test, everybody came out relatively unscathed, as far as I know. And that's great, because I hate seeing guys getting injured preseason. And
starting, yeah, they're already trying to play catch-up before the season's even started. I totally agree.
Yeah, exactly. And so it looks like we're off to a good start. And, you know, I'm kind of pumped about the whole thing.
You can feel it building, can't you?
Yeah, well, I can. And I mean, I think right there, that is the point, is that there's a level of anticipation. And, you know, you get a test, and then you're all excited, and then it's like, you wait for a bit, and okay, when is the next one? You know, and I always laugh, because when we're in the you know, the heart and soul of the season, when we get these double race weekends, it's brutal, because, you know, I'm trying to do all the Ride on 2 stuff, I'm trying to put the show together, and there is so much going on that trying to keep on top of it and actually deliver the full amount of news and pictures and all that can become a tad overwhelming, but maybe I'll drag you along this year and you know, put you to work too. All right, so let's move on to other news. That is our Sepang wrap. If anybody has any feedback or info, feel free to send it in through our feedback form at MotoGPOD.com. What do we got coming up next in GP as well? I think it's a week from now. There is a test in Barcelona, Catalonia track, for Moto2 and 125s, which is really cool. You know, it's weird. I don't know if you noticed this, Barton, but the last couple of tests for Moto2, they've been combined with World Superbike. And that just...
Yeah, it didn't make them look that good when the World Supersport 600s were giving them a reasonable spanking.
Sure. Well, you know, and part of that is because they don't have their real motors yet. And that is still a big question, is what are these revised CBR 600R engines that are built to Moto2 spec, what are they going to put out? They're not here yet. These guys are running on, like, you know, regular CBR 600 engines with kit ECUs and, you know, maybe some HRC bits. But we're still kind of waiting to see what Honda's going to deliver.
On the engines they've been using so far, have they been standardized? Do we know that? Or is it a case of each team just gets a CBR 600 engine from where it can and is allowed to make certain alterations?
That's exactly it. They aren't standardized. So everybody's built to a different level. So, you know, it's apples and oranges really at this point. And, you know, as we were just saying, it's still testing. I think everybody really right now is focusing on chassis because that's all you can do. You don't have the engine, the spec engine, the spec ECU, the spec wiring harness, all that stuff. So you're kind of stuck trying to imitate whatever you're ultimately going to end up with. Now, the chassis obviously are very important. You know, that's what makes the bike go around corners, and the 600s are going to want to have the best corner speed and suspension they can have. So it's a bit of a guessing game. But yeah, going up against the Supersport boys, does look a little odd. Those guys are getting, and so they said the spec from, I think FIM or whatever, FIM or Dornan, one of the two, said the Moto 2 engines would put out 150 rear wheel.
Wow.
Yeah, which is pretty good for a 600.
Right.
But there are World Supersport bikes that are putting out very close to that. It can vary, but pretty doggone close to that. So the advantage that they'll have in Moto 2 is that you can have, you know, you're not running a production bike chassis. You can run crazy eccentrics all over the place, lighter weight, put your weight where you want it to be. I'm still looking forward to the class. There's 15 different chassis manufacturers.
I think it's going to be really, really interesting, particularly watching where the cards fall.
Yeah.
You know, we've got some big name riders there.
Sure.
But we've got a lot of different chassis makers coming in from other series. Not all of them, you know, necessarily 600 experts. Some of them will know the MotoGP track. Some of them are coming from, you know, Europe and America and World Supersport backgrounds. And I mean, I can't find where I put it. I found off it, wrote it down some notes earlier, that they were still hoping to get the engines there for the Barcelona test, but that information was a month old. So I don't know if that's still the case, or do we know if they're going to get the proper engines for this test?
I do not know. I could make some inquiries, but I probably wouldn't get it back quickly.
They keep saying they'll get them, and then it's put back. I mean, the clock is running out.
Yeah, I think the absolute key is that they're probably dyno testing them to the gills to make sure that they're reliable, because when you hand somebody a sealed spec engine, the last thing you want to have it do is blow up, and you know this independent company, which I want to say they're Swiss, but that's just off of memory, is going to look horrible, right? And I still have some questions about how all that's going to work, because I mean, what do they get? They get two engines per bike for a weekend. I'm really not sure. I certainly wouldn't want to be handed one engine and not have a spare just in case. We'll see.
Sure. I think that the thing that at first, like most fans, I was resistant to change, and I thought, oh no, you could see the economic sense of moving away from two strokes. But as the more information that came in, the more I thought, this could be really, is it 37 permanent entries with up to 6 wildcards for certain rounds? That's going to be a heck of a race to watch.
It will be. It will be. And, you know, I've said it over and over, is that World Supersport is one of the finest classes to watch. And this is going to be like World Supersport Plus, because it's going to be, again, on the world stage, but it's some of those venues that the World Superbike guys don't head to, but with all of the pomp and circumstance, if you will, of a MotoGP round, and with some, you know, big name riders. I do think at a certain point there's going to be some bleed over back and forth, and it will actually allow, which has not really always been a stepping stone, if you will, World Supersport guys to have another path into MotoGP.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think Eugene's made quite a good move of, and to a degree, although he wanted to go to it, Bradley Smith, they're going to have a season where they can sit back and see how it all pans out.
I don't think if you were a rising star, my personal thing is I'd be like, as much fun as Moto2 sounds like, I'd much rather see which bikes pan out well, because you could find yourself on a toad.
Yeah, absolutely.
Know, you never know until you go into battle how good your armor is, because you don't know how sharp your opponent's sword is going to be.
Yeah, no, nice analogy.
And so, you know, again, the testing is just that. I think when the flag drops on the first Moto 2 race, my eyes are going to be pinned, because I really want to see who is able to pull to the forefront. We might get some inklings of that from the tests as they go on, especially Qatar. I think they're going to run a Qatar. Are they going to run a Qatar? I'm not sure off the top of my head. But, yeah, it should be.
I believe they are, yeah. Yeah.
So, the interesting thing about this Barcelona test, there are a few people that aren't going to be there, which I don't know the reasoning why, but I'll at least run them off for you. For the Scott Racing folks, Alex De Angelis and Nicolò Canepa aren't going to be there. Matteo Pessini for JR Moto2. Tony Elis will be there, but not riding. I guess there's some issues or something with his Moriwaki bike. I wish I could tell you the reasoning why behind that, but I really don't know. I do find it, you know, it's funny. Tony's going to be there, and he's probably going to be gnawing on his nails, because the worst thing you can ever do is beat a race and not be raced.
Not race.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or a test or anywhere. You know, he is hired. he does have a ride, but unfortunately the ride is not going to be there. So that's about all I got on Barcelona. We will have to see. We will have to see.
Absolutely. It's going to be an interesting one.
Indeed. Indeed. This next bit came through David Emmett at Moto Matters, and it just kind of made me laugh. Actually, it came through David from, I think, GP1. Paolo Sclera, thank you for everything, by the way. It was Rossi. This is the headline. Rossi to stop discussing future plans. And I just.
Yeah. Forgive us for being cynical, Valentino.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Best of luck on that. You know, I don't. It's almost like he said that as a joke, because I can't even imagine. If you can pull it off, more power to him. But the Italian and the Spanish press are just going to be asking him all the time, and eventually he's going to spill something out. I mean, that's what they do. That's what we do. But it did make me laugh.
And it's what everyone wants to know. And what I like about Rossi is just he's such a clever operator, and he's such an entertaining one. But the interview with Susie Perry at the end of last season, where he said, "I will not stay beyond next year if they re-sign Jorge Lorenzo." I can't remember the exact words. I can dig it out. I've still got the interview. And a week later said, no, that's not what I said. That was lost in translation. So, no, it wasn't. It wasn't translated. You said it in English. We heard it in English. That's what you said. You know, so I think he plays, particularly with the Italian and Spanish press, he knows how they react to every word he says. I think he's just having a bit of fun with it and making a point at the same time. But, I mean, I remember a lengthy email exchange with yourself and Jules towards the end of last season where I do think with the rise of Ben Spies, this year will be interesting. If Ben Spies proves as effective as he looks, I think Yamaha hold the whip hand. Mm. And I think if Rossi wants too much, they'll say no, because they've got the future. I know. I'm sure he sells bikes like no one else can, and they want to keep him on board for life. They don't want him going somewhere else. But you start looking at his options and you think, I mean, I think, was it yourself who pointed out him at the Ferrari test? Rossi, all in red.
Oh, yeah.
That was an interesting image. It's like, yeah, it wouldn't go with the helmets, but...
on top of that, with the Marlboro barcode on the car, you know, you're looking at... Yeah. You're like, hmm.
It's a four-wheel Ducati.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and the funny thing is the names between the two crew chiefs are quite similar, even though they're not related. Anyway, best of luck on that, Valet. I give you till... let me see... Season starts in April. I give it until
March.
Yeah. Okay. All right. The next one is really interesting and a bit of intrigue, because this isn't something you usually hear about. I mean, it's a relatively common thing in the normal world, but apparently it's a pang. Overnight, I believe it was the night between the first and second day they were testing. Somebody went into the Aspar garage and stole all of their laptops and their server. And, you know, that's where all of their data is. And it's gone. Yeah. And We don't usually have that kind of intrigue. I remember some bikes being stolen from BSB garages a couple of years ago. But those are bikes. This is data, and this is really proprietary key stuff. So we'll have to see what comes out of that. There was a discussion about it at RideOn2, which really descended into a bit of a rabbit hole. But you can go over there and see it. Not sure off the top of my head what the name of it was, but you'll be able to find it in the MotoGP thread. But we'll have to see what comes out of that because, that sounds very F1-ish, doesn't it?
Absolutely, it's yeah. I've got to admit, this one completely passed me by. I didn't pick up on that. I've not been on Ride On 2 for much this week due to work and life commitments, but that's possibly worrying.
Yeah.
Were they after the laptops and the hardware and to sell on the black market, or were they after the information?
Well, you and you would have to think the latter because there was all sorts of other really expensive gear there, and none of that was touched, and basically lying right next to it. Everything was in
Yeah.
the garage, and there's a fair amount of data sharing that goes on. A fair amount, not a lot. It's a new Ducati team, right? Okay.
Yeah.
So they're already being handed information from Factory Corsa, which is going to be on those boxes. So, why would somebody take that? And then, so the inevitable questions came up, are you guys using encryption? And this is where the geek in me totally comes in. Anyway, we don't have a whole bunch of information, but it is an interesting story and something that's kind of fun to talk about. And we'll see what comes out of it. The next one. Did you know about this?
The data sharing.
Yeah.
Well, I knew that Rossi and Lorenzo are going to share less data this year.
Correct.
That's one of the things they've come out with saying, and I think there's an element in both camps going, right, well, now we'll see what the
Yeah.
truth is. But between, am I right that Fiat Yamaha will have complete access to Tech Toire's info, but not necessarily a two-way street?
That is my understanding as well.
That's like, how much do you want to load things in your own favor?
A lot.
I know they're a satellite team, but that's a bit, it brings me back a little bit to, and you can't be a bike racing fan. I don't, not an objective one, without admiring Rossi. But all his stuff towards the end of last season about, I don't want, a teammate that can challenge me, was effectively what he was saying. Well, if you really want to be the greatest of all time, surely you should be stood there saying, no, bring it on, anybody. Same kit as me, same tyres, same data, everything, and I'll still beat you because I'm the best. And it's a bit, it's economics, I guess. It's economics. But what it makes me think, what if Ben Spies starts winning races? I don't think it will happen. I agree with you, Jim. I think he'll do very well, but I think that means point scoring and the odd podium lower step. But if he does start winning races, would Fiat Yamaha take steps to slow him down?
Well, okay, so, and this actually dovetails into a discussion that we were actually into the prior thing that we were talking about the laptops, because if you remember back to 2007 with Pramac Dantin, who had Alex Barros on board at Mugello, he managed to sneak a third in front of Casey Stoner. And rumor has it that Factory Corsa was not very pleased about that. And they did not get the same level of support for the rest of the year after that. So, yeah, what would happen? I think they want all four of them, they no want nothing more than to have all four top spots. But I think they probably do have an internal priority over who their stars are, right? Who knows? We're not privy to that, but that would be weird. Well, okay. Well, question for you.
Yeah.
I have to think back. I know who it was. Who was the last satellite racer to win a race?
I'm going to say off the top of my head Marco Melandri, but I probably haven't thought that through.
That was evil, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I think it could have been Melandri at PI in that wet race, but I think it was – you might be right, or Elias in that one race where he picked Rossi. But that was 2006, and I think Melandri was in 2007.
2007.
Yeah. That if that was Melandri, that would have been his one-handed power slide on – broken down wet side of the last corner. That's a classic. All right. We're dragging this one on, but that's okay. That's okay. So data sharing, especially across the garage at Fiat Yamaha, we'll have to see how that goes because that's what he said he was kind of not going to do. We'll have to see how that goes.
Absolutely.
In the show notes, just for you guys to take a look at, just on Wednesday, I got a peek at the Sudermoto 2 bike, and, well, it's gorgeous. And so take a look at that. I think the pictures are actually on Facebook. If you can't find them, I'll probably put them on Ride-On, too. I'm not sure, Martin, if you spent a lot of time at MotoGP.com, but, boy, they've swapped things around. They've got a whole new stats layout, and I don't know if you've seen it or if you have any opinion, looked at it, I'm like, bleh.
It's changed, not necessarily improved.
Yeah, and there's things that are missing too. But that I can understand being a web guy. But
some of the stuff on MotoGP.com, I found the easiest way to find the information you're looking for is Google it.
Yeah,
and then the Google page will take you straight to the page you want, because if you try and go through the website, it can take a 2010 calendar was a case in point. When the provisional one was first announced, after a week it didn't appear on the front page, and being a bit of a net nugget, I couldn't find it, so I just go Google, put 2010 calendar intimate, and then I'd save it as a bookmark on that page. It's not the easiest website. It's got better than it, I mean, if you think back a few years, it was
When the entire thing was driven massively by Flash, they're kind of getting back to a little bit of normal coding stuff. But still, folks, you don't need to change it every year. Last year was awesome. Last year actually just worked. So drop-down menus all over the place, don't need them. Thanks a bunch. We always do that. We always bag on MotoGP.com, but we're trying to provide useful feedback. And I know that there's people from Dorna. There's people that are associated with MotoGP.com that listen. So we're trying.
Now Jim, to interrupt, that leads me to a question that I have always meant to ask and never remembered. And so I'm going to do it live on the show. Gavin Emmett, David Emmett, Gavin Emmett, former head of communications at Dorna, does After the Flag. David Emmett runs MotoGP Matters. Sean Emmett, former BSB racer, and I believe he raced in America. They've got to all be from the same family, haven't they?
You would think so. And, to be honest, I've actually meant to ask David that question before, but Gavin and David look so different. I'm not sure. And Sean Emmett, that's a valid question. But you would have think after all the time that we've talked to them that at least one of them might have volunteered that information. So
if anyone knows, let us know, because that way we'll get better informed.
Well, I know that both David and Gavin listen, so they'll probably sort of chuckle and maybe even pull our leg and say, oh, yeah, we're all cousins. It's a great question.
We're married, yeah.
All right. Hey, let's move on to a little bit of World Superbike and World Supersport news, because there's not a whole bunch. And this is kind of World Superbike anti-news in a way, the first one. John Hopkins, I don't want to call him a fallen angel. I had that in question marks because he's really not well. He's certainly fallen a lot in the last few years, and that's kind of been his downfall, if you will. He has landed on a great team, but he's all the way back in AMA with Team Hammer with the M4 Monster Suzuki. Great bike. Had a great test last week. The key for him is going to be to stay healthy, and he's on a Suzuki 1000 now. Which, if you think about it, if he can be successful, may be a path back up because he's still young. The key is to stay healthy, and so I hope he does that. So here's kind of, this is our wind-up, if you will, for World Superbike. PI is coming up. Very excited. It's a couple of weeks away. But we have a test beforehand. So there's people that are already heading down there to get used to the weather, to get some training in. There's a lot of people who actually travel early for these tests, not only to do that, but because travel is, there's a lot of things that can happen during travel. You lose your kit, you get sick from the plane flight, you don't want to be late. So there's a lot of people heading down to PI, and the PI tests, I've always thought, I'm not sure what you think, but are actually really cool to pay attention to because you find out a lot there. You know, it's essentially a test before the race.
It's been described before, isn't it? It's extended qualifying.
Yeah, exactly. And I've actually seen speeds at those and lap times at those faster than QP. It's kind of astounding in a way. But
I'm guessing it's the end of the Australian summer, isn't it, at the moment? So, or is it their autumn? I'm not familiar with the climate there, but because it can be so changeable there, can't it?
Sure. Well, PI. Yeah. It really all depends. There was a, I'll try and put this in, remember to put this in the show notes, but BMW did their official intro earlier this week. And it was funny because there was an interview with Troy Corser on it. And he said halfway through, and this is to me, this is just kind of a classic. He said, hopefully the weather will hold up and the seagulls will stay down. Mm-hmm. The man has run into a, oh, what did he say?
He's had a few there, hasn't he?
Yeah. He says, I hope I don't run into any birds. And then he goes, or at least not the ones that fly.
Yeah. He just doesn't get any older.
No. No, he's pretty much locked in. All right, so that's it for World Superbike, World Supersport. There is a lot more stuff coming up, but in the meantime, do I want to go? I will. I'm going to go through this, and I'm not going to do it verbatim because I don't want anybody to get insulted. But Matt Millett, retired, but certainly not retired from communicating with the world. He joined Twitter last year. And I will have, I'm just going to put it this way. I will put his Twitter address in the show notes, and I will let you go read the things he's been saying lately.
Sorry, I can't help but laugh. I'm just reading the notes you've made.
Yeah, and he's, I believe outspoken might be far too mild of a term.
Candid.
Yes, he reminds me an awful lot of Carl Fogarty at his most glaring, if you will. But it's funny because he's just, you know, he's shooting this out at the world and kind of waiting to see what the reaction is. And the reaction is he's getting all sorts of it. And he's been doing a whole bunch of interviews on the Throttle, and those have been fantastic. Just kind of got to wonder what he's up to. What he's up to. I'm wondering if he wants to angle for a broadcaster spot. Do you think anybody would actually ever dare put him on the air?
Only after 9 o'clock in the evening. After the post-watershed. He's not going to be asked to be an ambassador for the sport, is he?
Yeah, probably not. Probably not. Okay. A final bit of news, and then we'll figure out how to wrap this up. I just got this on Wednesday as well, and this is very cool. And I'll definitely have there's a thread about this on Ride-On too. I'm not sure if you've seen it, Martin, but if not, you should go look. FTR, who produces Moto2 chassis, are putting together a 10 limited edition Haslam Elf Moto2 bikes. And with the old classic black, red, blue Elf paint job that we all remember. Remember the old center hub steering from back in the day?
Yeah.
But it's a straight up modern bike with a, you know, full World Sport spec engine in it. It's kind of a shame because there were people asking them, they're like, oh, you know, can we get some, you know, people with a lot of money, can we get one of these for a track day bike? And sure you can for, you know, like 100 grand or something, but these are like collector's items. There's only 10 of them, and they're full works and just gorgeous. Or at least the artist's rendering of what the paint job is going to look like is gorgeous. So take a look. Take a look in the show notes. The engines are built by the same guy that builds Eugene's engines. I mean, these things are going to be quick. They're going to be, you know, they're going to handle like nobody's business. Looking forward to it. FTR has been actually providing us here at MotoGPOD with a fair amount of information. We really appreciate it. Wow, Martin.
I think, just thinking on the Ron Haslam thing, of course, his race school he runs at Donington, they're announcing at the end of February where they'll be running this year, the race school, because there's a risk they're going to have to move, like everything else in Britain, to Silverstone. But there is some stuff on MotoGP.com about Silverstone and on MotorcycleNews.com, and it does seem to be coming on apace. And even though they got F1 back, it is not affecting the changes they're making to the bike track.
That's what I hear too. And then and back on the FTR thing, buying one of those bikes includes 3 days of training with the Ron Haslam school with Ron Haslam. So
I've done two of the days there. They are absolutely fantastic.
Yeah,
they are. Yeah, it's quite expensive, but there's no way I'd have got into track days as quickly and as effectively as I did if I hadn't gone. The instruction you get there cannot be compared to what you get on a normal track day with an instructor that follows you around and gives you tips. It is absolutely brilliant.
Cool.
It's a different technique to they use at the Californian Superbike School, which we have a branch of over here in the UK. But I think, you know, the different techniques will suit different riders. But no, I can't recommend it enough. It's very, very good.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, so if you happen to be rolling in dough or whatever your currency is in your country of choice, take a peek at these things. That has to be my favorite paint job of all time. I don't know why. It just stirs my soul. And when I saw it on Wednesday, I was just like, oh, want. Yeah. All right, Martin, I thank you so much for joining us.
No problem at all.
Very cool. And if you want to come back, you're more than welcome. And it's, you know, we kind of joke about you being our super fan, but you also provide us a lot of information, and we totally appreciate it. So,
my pleasure.
Great. You have a great evening and a great day, and I hope your weather clears up and you can find a place to land. And we'll talk to you soon.
Super. Thanks, Jim.
All right, Jim.
Good night, all.
MotoGP is a trademark of Dorna Sports SL. The MotoGPOD podcast and MotoGPOD.com are not affiliated with Dorna Sports SL. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners. MotoGPOD isn't affiliated with any of them.